Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Parents, if you've ever suffered your way through toddler tantrums, or possibly even worse, teenage tantrums, then listen to this, because in tonight's instalment of the Family Series, we're going to talk about boundaries. Alan and Helen Meyer from Careforce Life Keys are respected experts on family dynamics, so it's a real treat that we've had this opportunity over the last few weeks and tonight to hear of their wisdom, and they join us in the studio again. Alan and Helen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about boundaries, but also, as you call it, parenting under pressure. Where are we going to go?
Well, I think parenting is under pressure from the word go, but the pressure can increase as they get a little older. You see, changing nappies and late night feeds, you know, colicky babies, playing peekaboo, all of that kind of stuff, that's got its level of pressure. But the older they get and the greater the level of their independence, then the more difficult the challenges become and the higher the stakes involved.
Yes.
For example, when four-year-old Susie had a bit of an argument with you over her bedtime, that was a challenge. It was pressure. But the pressure goes through the roof when 14-year-old Susie tells you that she's in love and she's determined to change the household rules about her accountability. Mm-hmm. When 5-year-old Todd had a fight with you over eating vegetables, there was a challenge, but it's a very different deal when 15-year-old Todd says he's not going to school anymore and he's going to get a real job at McDonald's. When 6-year-old Mary resisted cleaning up her room, you had a challenge, but when she's 16 years old and she's rubbing shoulders with a crowd at school at makes your heart tremble, and then one Sunday morning she tells you that she doesn't do church anymore, that's a very different level
mm-hmm. yes.
of pressure. 7-year-old Anthony was a challenge when it came to perhaps getting him to do his homework and speak respectfully about his teachers at school, but when 17-year-old Anthony's taken up smoking and it doesn't smell like tobacco to you, you begin to wonder how to handle that kind of pressure. That's what I mean when I think, you know, parenting under pressure takes a decidedly dangerous turn often as the kid's level of independence increases.
Okay, so here's where the wisdom comes in. Whether it's that 5-year-old or the 15-year-old, where are you setting your boundaries and how do you do it? How early to start, perhaps?
Yes, well, I think sometimes we do develop some fairly unhealthy ways of communicating just out of frustration or maybe our own background. But I think there's some things we need to make fairly clear if we're going to have cooperation, particularly with our teenagers in this case. And one of them is in terms of establishing clear rules, that we're not always shifting the boundary so that there's an inconsistency about what we're asking our kids to do. So when we're talking about establishing clear rules, it may be that teenagers are really good at putting their own interpretation on things, and we need to make really clear what we're asking of them. For example, if you say to your kids, don't be home late tonight, I mean, what does that actually mean?
Yes.
I mean, in your head, you might mean, well, you need to be home at 11 o'clock in bed. For them, it might be 1 o'clock and they'll get home really late, 1 o'clock, and you'll say, well, I told you not to be late. I wasn't. It was 1 o'clock.
That's right.
So this is one of the things with teenagers. You need to be really, really clear about what you mean. When you say don't come home late tonight, you need to say how late is late for you. It's 12 o'clock. Also, you need to establish this. It kind of sounds funny, but it's true because they're real literalists and I love them. And my favourite thing was teaching Year 9 boys. I used to love that class when I was teaching. But whose watch are we actually going to go by? Is it my watch, the kitchen clock, your watch? Mm. So you synchronise watches. But also, when you say be home at midnight, I was home at midnight, but I was outside talking until 3 in the morning. No, you have to establish exactly what you mean. I mean home at midnight, in your bed, and with the light out going to sleep. And that sounds kind of ridiculous, but this is how, with teenagers, you need to be that exact, or they'll find a loophole.
Without being pedantic about
exactly.
it, or unrealistic about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and you can negotiate the time. I mean, if they've got something they need to go to that will bring them home later, that's fine. But all I'm trying to get across is the fact that we need to be really clear.
And for the kids to understand, perhaps, that she's actually trying to do well by them and by the family unit as well.
That's right.
How important is it, I'm sure it is hugely important, for both parents to be united in the boundaries that they set?
Well, united we stand and divided we fall. I mean, Jesus couldn't have been clearer when he said, a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. And, of course, the challenge that will sometimes be present is that we were raised in different families. We have different views on the kind of freedom and the kind of restrictions that are appropriate for children at different ages. I, as a boy, grew up kind of running across the park and going down the creek and punting pieces of bridge-making equipment down flooded creeks and so on as a kid.
Those were the days.
And I grew up with, you know, as a fairly young man going up on a farm and driving trucks and tractors and shooting rifles and so on. So the thought of giving kids opportunity is to experience life is not foreign to me. You better get this sorted out behind closed doors. You know, what really is appropriate, and try and hear one another in the processing of your own family background about what's going to be age appropriate for your kids.
Yeah. And I think one really good example from our lives would be, you know, we had a daughter and three sons, still have, but, you know, as a mother, you can often, without realising it, tend to be very overprotective of your sons, particularly when they start to want to do some things that are risk-taking, when the testosterone's kind of on the rise and they want to go dirt bike riding or doing all kinds of things that, as a mum, you might think, oh, that's really scary, I don't want them to do that. And I remember the conversation Alan and I had where I was very concerned, I didn't want the boys to go off doing some of those things, and he said, look, Alan, you've got to let them go. It's part of their natural need to be able to assert themselves, to let off some of the aggression that they've got in a healthy way. And so it would have been really unhelpful if we'd had this discussion in front of the kids.
Yes, of course.
Because they would have been pretty good at maybe playing us off against each other. But also it's part of being willing to listen to one another in your parenting.
Mm. If anything, again, that Dobson said that stuck with me over the years, it was this, that you really do need to develop a strong bond with your kids from the earliest years, because by the time a child is 12 years old, if they want to take you, the law is on their side.
Yes.
We discovered this, you know, very painfully when our youngest child, at the age of 13, I found that he was smoking marijuana in my backyard. We created a tennis court so that our kids would be able to have friends around, and the friends came. We were the only playground in town. And right in my backyard, the neighbours introduced my own sons to marijuana. When I found out, I challenged both of the boys strongly, and immediately the older one stopped and never touched it again. The younger one was hooked. And at this point, you realise a kid can take you, even at the age of 13, if he sets his heart to do it.
Yes.
The government were willing to supply him with an opportunity to leave home. They were willing to give him money in order to do that, because they described the conflict we were having as irreconcilable differences, which was absolute rubbish. We loved the boy. We had a great relationship with him. He was committed to smoking marijuana, and we were committed to him not smoking marijuana. Now, eventually, he left home. For 2 years, he packed his bags and he left home, and the government provided him with income in order to be able to do that. We simply persisted in praying for our son, treating him with the dignity and the love that he deserved, but requiring him to accept responsibility for the decisions he was making. And the decision we were making is that our home was a drug-free situation. He would never be able to use drugs in our home with our approval.
So the boundary remained, and yet you had to deal with it, I guess, with tough love.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
But we didn't. It was never contempt. It was never. It wasn't even criticism. It was simply a very clear value. We have a value. We're going to be a family that honours the law, and we are going to be a family that raises you with the desire to be a decent and honourable, hardworking citizen. And if you cannot, embrace that value, then you need to accept the responsibility that comes with that.
But we never pushed him away to try push him out of our lives emotionally or physically to try and manipulate him to change. We always expressed love to him whenever we saw him. He came home for meals. We went out to see where he was. And we did spend time with him. And it was really, it was tough love on one level, but it was unconditional on the other.
Well, it turned out really well. It's a stunning thing that the drug experience robbed him of completing high school. So he went back, he put himself through high school, and he's the only one of our children with a university degree, and he actually became a qualified teacher, and he's been working recently with autistic kids. He's now married with three kids. He was away for 2 years, and because we had a very clear value, we loved him passionately, but the values were not, they were non-negotiable. And he, realizing that, went out in the world to have his little run. And this is where I think one thing we have to recognize with parents is that you cannot live your child's life. You can't make them be what you want them to be. The degree to which we influence them is the strength of our relationship with them. And for 2 years, he chose to accept the responsibility of doing life his own way. At the age of 17, he came back home. God touched his life profoundly. And it reminds me a little bit of the life of St. Augustine, one of the greatest Christian influences in history.
Yes.
And Augustine was a troubled teenager, got a girlfriend pregnant, had a child outside of wedlock. His mother passionately loved God and taught him to be, raised him in the faith. But for a number of years, St. Augustine was a wild boy. He was he partied hard and long. He got caught up in the cults, but his mother never ceased to pray for him. And eventually he heard the Bishop of Milan preaching. God opened his heart, and those strange and disturbing years resulted in one of the great Christian witnesses of all history in St. Augustine. And his mum, 9 days after his coming to Christ, said, my calling and my duty in life is finished, and she died. St. Augustine went on to become one of the greatest voices and influences for Christianity in the dying, at the end of the death of the Roman era.
Yes, yes.
And we need to realize that just as Jesus did with Peter, Peter, Satan has desired to have you. Jesus did not try to rescue him. He did not try to manipulate life so that that Peter couldn't make a mistake. He said, I know you're going to make a mistake, but I've prayed for you. Mm-hmm. And when you have turned around, strengthen your brethren. And Peter became one of the great apostles of the New Testament. Parents, you need to have courage, because sometimes kids make decisions you wish they hadn't made.
Yes.
And in those years, you've got to have courage. You've got to hold the line and love them passionately. Hold the values and don't change them, and believe that God will bring them back home.
Can I ask about two specific arenas to kind of wrap up, where the boundary issue is particularly fraught? First of all, with sex. How do we set our boundaries for our boys and girls and their relationships and sexuality, especially when the rest of the world is telling teens that they can do what they want? How's that going to work?
Well, that's been one of the issues I think I've focused on most in my life. I created the program called The Search for Intimacy. As a high school teacher, it was one of the things I first began to address with young people, because they live in a world which tells them really the sex is the meaning of life.
Yes.
Well, I think the answer is to give your kids really good theology on sex. Every big question your kids will ever face is a theological question at its core. So I think that one of the most important things parents do is help kids to connect the dots as far as theology and the big picture of life is concerned. Not just rules, big picture of life. But the fact is, the Bible holds out a very clear a goal of virginity, a goal of purity, and a goal of sex belongs in the confines of marriage. And the best way to help kids to do that is if they understood the origin, the purpose, and the power of sex, if they understood what sex does to a person, then you've got the best chance of them treating their sexuality with profound respect, treating the sexuality of others with respect, and of holding onto this absolutely firmly that God is a matchmaker. Mm. God has my best interests at heart, and if I walk with God, I will not miss out. I'll do well in this life.
Okay, that's the first arena. The second arena is that of blended or separated families, where setting boundaries can be such a tough thing to do because these poor kids are living in two separate worlds sometimes. Mm. How do we set boundaries there?
Well, I think the most important thing, as we said in a previous session, was that there needs to be a lot of work done prior to any marriage. There needs to be an understanding of family background, where you've come from, what your values are, and that needs to be discussed with a counsellor who can help work that through. If it's got beyond that and the relationship's already established, then there again, it needs to be a lot more intentional for parents rearing children in this sort of situation. This is where your family meeting really does come into operation, because getting the kids together, being able to get them to talk with one another, pray together, ask for forgiveness for things, I think that's all an important element of it. And again, being unified and how you're going to approach it. And I think experts will say that it is best for you to discipline your own biological children rather than the other person's until there's a relationship of trust and love established.
Yeah. I'll say one other thing. It takes a village to raise a child.
Oh, yes.
And it's important to recognise that sometimes God never intended that mums and dads would have to have all the resource within themselves to raise their own kids.
That's a great point.
God intended that, for example, in church life, that there is a whole village involved. And sometimes the best person to get through in a blended family situation is not the parents themselves or anyone in the family. It's some wise uncle or some 65-year-old white-haired dude who for some reason... captures the heart of this kid,
yes,
and is able to help them. I'll never forget, as in my own experience, I got into ministry as a pastor by helping high school kids, by helping teenagers get their lives sorted out. And I was good at it. Then I had a son I couldn't reach myself. But it was another minister who touched his life.
Yes.
Then when in our own church, I remember one of our elders who had an adopted child. They went through a very tough season, and he was trying his best to give good boundaries and good vision and hope and love and stuff to this child, he just couldn't touch them. I will never forget beginning to connect with that child personally, and for some reason we clicked. And we would sit and talk for hours on goals and visions and dreams, and he came to me one day with tears in his eyes and said, "You've saved her life." Now, it takes a village to raise a child. I tell you what, I wouldn't want to raise kids and not be in a great local church.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I promise you.
Yeah.
I would not want to be facing the challenge of raising kids and not be in a great local church where there's wisdom in other people and skills and gifts that one of my sons will look back. He's at his wedding. He said he mentioned a particular youth leader. He said, "When I was 18 years old, it was this particular youth leader who gripped, got a hold of my life and held me steady." And he said, as he was getting married, "I owe a lot of my future to that person." Takes a village to raise a child. And if you're in a great local church, you'll get all the help
and,
you can.
And what gratitude you'd feel as parents as well.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Hearing that. I'm loving our family series, and sadly it's coming to an end next week. So for tonight, Alan and Helen Meyer from CareForce Life Keys, thank you so much. Next week, your family, courtroom or living room. Look forward to that. See you then.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.